I think I'm having an art attack.
Welcome to another episode of Art Attack. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Justin Bua, and I'm here with my co-host, Lizzie Dastin, professor, art historian, and I myself am a self-proclaimed art historian, anointed by Lizzie. You say that's fair?
I think that any listener would also anoint you as an art historian. You really know as much as any art historian that I know, and your range is incredibly broad, which is impressive. And you are also an important painter, and you have such formidable skills in that department too. So I forget, because we don't talk about your work every week, and I think that it's always a good reminder that you have phenomenal skills in multiple arenas.
Oh, well, you're the best ever, and I'm going to keep you around, because obviously, without you, I'm nothing. So Lizzie, today we are jumping into the artist Grant Wood. Before you deep dive into his origin story or his origin work and contextualize him, I just wanted to say that I'm so glad we're doing this, because his painting that obviously we're going to talk about in Spotlight is American Gothic. And I would say that American Gothic, Mona Lisa, Edvard Munch's The Scream, and Michelangelo, God and Adam on the Sistine Chapel, those have to be the most satirized, like, ubiquitous paintings of all time, right? Like, he's top three of all time, that painting.
And also maybe Edward Hopper's Nighthawks, but American Gothic, yeah. If you don't know anything really about art history, you probably have at least seen a parody of American Gothic. And before we really visually analyze and unpack the work, it's the painting with a stern woman next to a slightly older man who has a pitchfork in front of him. I have dressed as American Gothic for Halloween. I'm sure others who are listening have too. So it really is emblematic of America, and whether there's a subtle criticality to that or a full celebratory embrace, I think the readings are manifold. But yes, if you think about American art or an image of rural America, that painting could be conjured.
Absolutely. He is, he's not a one-hit wonder either. You know what I mean? Like, there was a lot of artists historically who do that one painting that they're known for. But in terms of the potency of that image, I guess he would be like, I don't think anyone really, your average, even art historian, doesn't know many of his works in his oeuvre, right?
Yeah, I think that the style, people who study the field may know the style of regionalism, but certainly if you are to ask what is Grant Wood known for, then that one painting comes up. In my classes, that is the painting that I teach, although I know other paintings that I do think have a tremendous amount of merit, and I hope that we'll be able to at least talk about one of them today, so we're not just describing one painting, but we're really describing a painter. And I think it's important also to just familiarize ourselves with what's happening at the time that he creates this iconic work. And the work is done in 1930, and in 1929, the stock market crashed. And so the whole culture and the cultural consciousness of the country is devastated economically, emotionally, spiritually. We're in ruins as a country. And if we think a little bit further back and more globally, from 1914 until 1918, the Western world was at war. And so I think we're still coming out of that. And then finally, there was a period of relative prosperity, and then the stock market crashes. So we're back in that place of desperation. And then World War II is just within 10 years of starting. And so this is a really tense, chaotic historical period for America. And there are so many cultural artistic dialogues between American artists and European artists. And that's significant to mention here because there was a huge schism in American art at the time between those who are looking to the European avant-garde and they're hoping to iterate some of those styles and choices and visual idioms in their own American art. And there's a whole other class of artists, and Grant Wood is chief among them, who are completely eschewing the European avant-garde, and they want to create something that feels decidedly American and something that is not interested in modernism. It's representational, it's highly objective imagery, and it's narrative, it's didactic, and it looks like it is more old-fashioned or rear guard, but it's worthy of note that it's not that Grant Wood couldn't paint in a more avant-garde style. He actually studied in Paris for many years, but he chose not to. And that choice is, in my opinion, part of what adds to the power of American Gothic, is that he is so self-conscious about creating something that feels highly American and patriotic and austere and something that can speak to the particular American experience at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question about him, right? Like half of the world thinks that it is speaking to complete our American culture, kind of like Rockwell was Americana, the purity of Americana. This was like the purity of he was a regionalist. Let's add that here. He was known as a regionalist painter. He's from Iowa, so he's painting his world. And a lot of people, half of the world, thinks that this is a painting celebrating American culture, celebrating the hardworking person, you know, celebrating the farmer. He's got the pitchfork, and you know, incidentally, that's his sister, who's the female, and his dentist, who's the male. And it was initially going to be husband and wife, but then the sister kept telling Grant, like, there's no way I'm going to be with this guy. He's so old. This is crazy. So, like, she forced him to make it into a father-daughter relationship, which works, right? Because the farm, you're growing up in an agricultural world, and you've got people in the family, everybody is lending a hand, and that's how it used to be. So it's, in one way, it's about, and this is what Grant pushed himself. He said, this is a nod. I came up with it when I was milking a cow, right? Like, that's how he said it. He said, I came up with this whole thing, and I come up with many of my ideas when I was milking the cow. Now, the other half is, that's bullshit. This is not a celebratory image of rural America. This is a satirization. This is satirical. This is making fun of those people. Look at this dopey guy. He looks so pissed off and angry. And look at her. She looks just so, you know, inbred. And you know, look at how she's dressed. This is not, no, even the people in his town were writing him letters like, this is an insult. We are not these Bible thumping people that you're making us out to be. This is crazy. Like, he was, in many ways, he split the observer into, wow, this is amazing, and this is celebrating, and then, oh my God. And perhaps when you look at all the satirical memes and cartoons and, you know, photo bashed images, you see that people have adapted that. I myself did a commission for a client where I painted that. I mean, you know, and I put him and his wife on, you know, in a satirical way, but it's been used so satirically in that way, much like the Mona Lisa or the Creation of God. I mean, Adam and, you know, Van Gogh, Starry Night, but this one, more than anything, people have really used to make fun of or to celebrate or something. So it's really interesting. And to this day, I could see both sides. What I do know, like if we're going to be detectives about this, Lizzie and Bua going deeper into this story, we do know that he hated milking cows. We do know that he hated livestock. We do know that that was a bunch of like horse shit, right? He really wasn't into that. But we also know that he was saying he was celebrating Americans. He was celebrating culture. He was celebrating rural America. He was a regionalist. But was he? You know, therein lies it, because he's saying one thing. And obviously he became very famous after this. He got it at the Chicago Institute, got $300 as a prize. And then he sold it to them, right? Is that what happened to the painting?
I believe so, but I wouldn't necessarily say that he became famous after this work. He was always panned, even by critics at the time. And so, yes, it was exhibited at the Art Institute of Chicago, which is one of the most incredible museums in the country, especially with a focus on American art. But he never really had a foothold in the art world. And I think it's because he just had no interest in modernism, and his work is ambiguous, and it's hard to know which side he falls on. And not really to comment on that, but I love your description of us as detectives. So if I might be able to just use some detective work, not necessarily to come up with whether he was satirizing or celebrating, I believe he was doing both, but just to maybe analyze some of his choices, I think we can see a lot about his understanding of American gender dynamics through this painting. I think we can see a lot of what the American spirit was undergoing in the aftermath of the stock market crash. So if you look at the woman there, right behind her shoulder, there's a little piece of shrubbery. And that, I think, is a visual device to pull her backwards to the home. And there's a textile in the window on the second story of the house that echoes the textile that she's wearing, which is another device, I believe, that draws her body to the domestic house. And so the woman is associated with the home. So there's a domesticity that we see in those two different areas that she shares. And then the man, on the other hand, he has a pitchfork that's in front of his body. And so that is a visual connector between his form and the farm. And so he is projected forward, she is receding backwards. And so I think that is a subtle way of suggesting to the viewer that men are, that their role is in generating money for the family. It's in the farm. It's in whatever kind of industry the man is associated with. And then the female role is in the home. And a little detail that I just love about this painting is that the form of the pitchfork is echoed in the stitching of his overalls. It looks identical to that.
And in the window as well, in the pitched window from in the top window of the home that they live in.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's the same energy of the pitchfork as well. And the three lines of his shirt. You know what I mean? Right, it seems to be echoed everywhere. And
it really is. So there's such a specificity in certain areas of this painting, but then in others, there are just vague generalities. The trees in the back are completely just inarticulated. They are just these little circular blobs. Mm-hmm. And so I find those choices to be really interesting. Why completely mirror the shape of a pitchfork in the subtle stitching of the outfit and then not really paint the trees? And so I think that there are interesting, engaging juxtapositions throughout. It isn't just what does he feel about these people, but it's how does he depict them?
Yeah. And as you could see that his attention to detail, his rendering is, like you said, he studied in Paris. He was definitely influenced by the Impressionists. He did a lot of en plein air paintings in while he was in Paris. He loved all the Impressionists while he was in Paris. But when he made a second trip to Germany, you could see that his real love, the love that echoed throughout his work, is really more about the Flemish artists, the Albrecht Dürers, the Jan van Eyck. I mean, if you look at Jan van Eyck, The Marriage of Arnold Finney, you could see that the persnickety details, you could see that he was obsessed. They were hardcore renderers, those guys. I mean, and that's almost never been revisited to this day. But he, you could see his love for them. It's very evident in where he's going as an artist from this point on, you know, as him, Thomas Hart Benton, you know, there's a school of them that are regionalists that painted in similar styles. But I would say that him in particular, specifically with the patterns and everything, it's a nod to those classic Dutch painters.
Oh, absolutely. And I think specifically in just the detailed rendering like you comment on, but I love that connection to the Arnolfini wedding, because I believe in that painting too, the woman is looking toward the man and the man is looking toward the viewer. And that's the same here, that I think also it's symbolic of a gender relationship, and also it's symbolic of power and authority. And that to me is also historically rooted, because at the time after the stock market crash, it was really difficult to find a husband, because many men, specifically in rural America, they left to go to more urban communities. And so there was just a lack of a male presence. And so maybe that also informed Wood's choice to paint a daughter with her father rather than a husband, even an older one, because it is almost this poignant reminder that she may never be married. She's always going to be alone with her father because she has no opportunity to marry.
Yeah, she seems very unhappy. She feels really unhappy. And I feel like she's looking at him like, do I really have to go, you know, get the eggs and clean the, you know, clean the whole chicken coop and have to go, you know, bail the hay? It just feels uncomfortably life just sucks. And that's why I feel he was more on the side of maybe making fun of it. Yeah, he is from Iowa. Yeah, he was part of that initially. But then he goes to really study in Paris. It comes back, but he's married for a little bit, but it's very well known that he's a closet homosexual as well, right? So, like, is he celebrating the culture, or he doesn't like livestock? He doesn't like to milk cows, but he's telling the press he does, you know, so that he's not getting eggs thrown at him by his local community. Or is he just really sarcastic? I mean, I think Gertrude Stein is the one that said that he's a very dangerous painter, because she thinks that his work is full and rife of satire. She said he was dangerous. I mean, it's interesting. You got it. Yeah, she's standing in front of his painting saying he's like a dangerous man, because he's full of just, you know, piss and vinegar in terms of the satirization of that world. You know, me on the other hand, I think, who cares? I think, like I said, right now I just said, I think he's satirizing it, but I could easily say tomorrow I've changed my mind and I think he's celebrating it, because there is something more. And then it begs the question of, have we looked into it so much that we're feeding narratives into this? Because there's so many different narratives fed through this painting. There's so many different satirical interpretations of this painting. Like, the painting is almost more created by the viewer at this stage of art history than it is by the actual artist himself.
I think that's a really smart point. And it's almost like this is something that we've seen so many times again and again and again that we never really look at it. And right. That's why for me as a viewer, my way toward understanding is just through formal analysis. And that's been helpful for me, just to look at the visual elements themselves. And of course, to connect those elements to history because I think that they're inextricably linked. But I completely agree that there's a lot of disparate energies in this painting and that both the lines of satire and celebration coexist. But I think I fall more on the celebration of American fortitude than anything else because the figures are so close to the viewer. And there's almost this predatory presence of us, and they are this fortress between us and the home. And at the time, so many people were losing their homes because of economic despair. So to me, the fact that these two bodies are very close to our own, it's a way to protect themselves, their home, their family, their community, and their house. And I see something just very, it's sad and poignant, of course, but also really strong and austere about that, is that we can go through economic hard times, globally challenging times where people are dying and all the rest, but yet the American spirit still stands. And so that's what I read. And I think that all of the interpretations, they do coexist, but I slightly eke out more toward the positive than the negative.
Yeah, I hear that. And I also think that contextualizing him as well, going through that period, he was in the war. He was a camoufleur, which was those, you know, they painted the ships. Thomas Hart Benton was as well. So they would do the sketches of the ships to delineate one ship from the other by painting patterns on them. So he, as well as Thomas Hart Benton, were both camoufleurs, which are these artists that would use their sketching abilities and painting abilities to do these draftsmanship. They would do a painting of these ships, and each one would be different from the other in terms of pattern. And then if there was a ship that would be lost, they would know that because that pattern would be nowhere to be found. That was a really weird job back in the days before there was all this AI and Photoshop. Right. But yeah, he was a camoufleur for World War One. And so he was in the war, and I mean, he was part of that culture. And so he saw America through the lens of, obviously, you know, someone from Iowa, but also someone from who was in the military and was part of, you know, having a hand in the military.
Oh, that's really interesting. And also he was an illustrator, mm-hmm. and I figure you would appreciate that aspect of his career, but he did illustrations for American contemporary novels, and he did jewelry design and decoration. He really did have quite a varied career. And you mentioned something that I wanted to go back to, because this is a lens through which more modern art historians see and analyze his work, and that is through his closeted sexuality. And this started really in the 90s. He was so deeply closeted, if in fact he was gay, which many people believe he was, but I don't know how you can prove that after the fact. So I think the assumption is that he was, but we don't know for sure. And now his work is being almost ghettoized through that lens. And mm-hmm. I do think that it is instructive, and it does help us understand another layer of what he was creating, but I don't necessarily think that that's the only lens that has value. And you also mentioned he was married. He was married just for 3 years. He said that it was a big mistake. All of his friends said that it was a big mistake. And that I think is really sad, that he was so fearful of his sexuality being known. And that's because it was still not really, well, I don't think that it was legal, not until 1961, but that he could suffer significant consequences if he shared that authentic truth about himself. And I think that is just so sad. And for me, I see a veil of concealment, of hiding a part of who he is, maybe hiding it in Americana, hiding it in camp, hiding it in the curvilinear way that the landscape, the hills roll. I'm not sure, but there is a sensuality to his work, not American Gothic, but to some of his later landscapes. There's one that was done, I think, the year before he died, and you can see this muscular, taut man, this farmer, working in the foreground, and the clothing gives little to the imagination. The pants are so tight, he's shirtless, and I think that's the most homoerotic of his paintings, but I just look at them with a little bit of sadness that he had to mask, conceal himself. And he was often described at the time as a shy bachelor, and that was euphemistic for a gay man. So I think people knew, but he was never able to celebrate himself in maybe the way that he was able to celebrate America.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the rolling hill landscapes, because he did so many beautiful paintings in that genre alongside other great artists like Thomas Hart Benton. And I think he was a very competent draftsman. He was a wonderful artist. And those works themselves, which don't have near the notoriety of American Gothic, are as good in different ways as American Gothic. American Gothic has all the shine and all, because it's become America, right? It's iconic America. But I think some of his other works are too, and maybe perhaps one day art historians will kind of brush the dust off of those and say, hey, look at this. This is significant because of X, Y, and Z. He was more than a one-hit wonder. He really was. He was a true artist, and didn't have a very long life either. He was 51 when he died from pancreatic cancer. So one of the most famous American painter, ironically, right? Like he really is, just because of his work. And his work is the most famous painting in American history. And it's not even that big, incidentally. It's kind of a small oil painting on beaverwood. On beaverwood, by the way. So yeah, he is the most famous, unfamous painter in American history. He really is. Like, not many people know about his life. Not many people know about his other works. Not many people know about anything about him, like what he looks like. Because with Norman Rockwell, like, you know Norman Rockwell, you've kind of seen his face around, and some of the other painters, you know their entire collection, their oeuvre, like Thomas Hart Benton. But for him, you really just know American Gothic, and you know it more than almost any painting in the history of art. It's wild. That's just wild.
And really, I think that maybe his work will also be revisited because of our cultural fascination with camp from the Met Ball, how that was the theme a couple of years ago. Of course, it was really initiated in the late 60s by Susan Sontag and her writings on camp. But I think that his paintings are really illustrative of those themes. It's the love of what is exaggerated. There's always something off of things being what they're not and looking and appearing as if they're one thing, but actually they're not. And it's a good taste, but bad taste and ironic value. And I see that in a lot of his paintings. And if you look at other landscapes of his, not just American Gothic, the perspective is off. They're often aerial, but it's not correct perspectives. And that wasn't an attempt at modernism necessarily. It's a little bit askew. And there are certain elements that are really carefully rendered and others that are not. And to me, there can't be. And especially with this subtle sense of homoeroticism, I think that also that amplifies the camp. And maybe that's the way that we revisit and enjoy his work.
I think it's sad, because once modernism came into fashion, abstract art, you know, a lot of these painters just kind of went away, because people lost the galleries and the museums, and the culture lost the taste for really wonderful painting like him and Benton. And it's just it was really sad that his work went so out of fashion so quickly. But I would recommend everybody to obviously revisit American Gothic, one of the most famous paintings ever, but also revisit Grant Wood's collection. Because Grant, if you Google Grant Wood, you're going to see a lot of paintings that are really cool and really and fun. And those other paintings are as Americana as American Gothic. So revisit Grant Wood, everybody. And thank you for joining us on another episode of Art Attack. Peace.